I want to tell you about Nantucket Island in Massachusetts, not because I've been there, but because I've read about it. On Nantucket Island in Massachusetts, there is a museum that commemorates a volunteer organization that came into being many, many centuries ago. Several centuries ago, travel by sea in that part of the world on the East Coast was very dangerous. They didn't have the weather forecasting capabilities. They didn't have the navigation instruments that we have today. And so things like a storm that would come up, the rocky coastline, this all made travel by ship very dangerous. And there were a lot of shipwrecks and a lot of lives were lost literally within sight of the shoreline. And so there were a group of people, a group of volunteers who banded together because they wanted to do something to save people who would get caught in these shipwrecks. And so they formed an organization. They called themselves the Life Saving Society. It was a group of volunteers, and their mission was to rescue people who were lost at sea following a shipwreck. And so what they did is they created along the coastline, they created what they called huts of refuge. And they stocked them with little boats and food and different supplies, life-saving supplies. And then 24/7, they would have volunteers who would man the coastline and watch for ships that got wrecked. And any time a shipwreck would happen, word would go out to the volunteer organization, and they would man their posts, and they would send people out to rescue people who were lost at sea. And they received no money, they received no recognition, they received really no praise, they just did it because it needed to be done. Lives needed to be saved. And just to remind each other how important their mission was, they came up with a motto. Their motto was this: you have to go out, but you don't have to come back. Now, if you were a recruiter for this organization, would you develop a motto that says, you have to go out, but you don't have to come back? You wouldn't think that anyone would sign up for an organization whose mission statement was that, would you? But people did, because they said, this is important work. It has to be done. I'm willing to put my life on the line to save people. And so they had lots of people who did this work. But over time, things began to change, and it particularly began to change when the U.S. Coast Guard was formed. And the idea that began to carry that day was simply this: let the professionals do it. They're trained, they're equipped, they have better resources. Let them save the people who are lost at sea. And so that's what they did. And the life-saving society got out of the life-saving business. They let the professionals do it. They stopped manning the huts of refuge. They stopped searching for sinking ships. And they stopped rescuing drowning people. But the interesting thing is, as an organization, they didn't actually disband. They stayed together because they liked each other. They liked spending time together. They liked the camaraderie. And so they would still have awards, dinners where they would hand out awards. And they'd still have meetings where they would get together. They just didn't save any lives anymore, because they weren't in that life-saving business anymore. And I'm here to tell you this morning that the same thing happens in churches. People forget the reason why a church got started in the first place. Over time, they forget what the mission and what the original purpose was, and they just start doing other things. They forget the Great Commission that we just heard, the words of Matthew 28, where Jesus said to his disciples, he says, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey just a few of the things that I have commanded you. No, obey everything I've commanded you, and surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age. The original mission statement. But it's so easy to forget the mission statement. And so churches that forget the mission statement, they still stay together. They don't disband. They still have their services and they still have their programs and they still enjoy each other's company. They're just not in the life-changing, life-saving business anymore. They get preoccupied with the bills that have to be paid and the things that have to be bought and keeping the budget balanced and keeping the building running and keeping everything going. But they just aren't in the life-change business anymore. They're not doing the things that Jesus originally called them to do. They forget that there are still people in this world who are hungry for God, who are hungry for their lives to be changed, hungry for their lives to have meaning and purpose and a life that actually matters. And that there are people who are physically hungry and needy and illiterate and naked. And who have physical needs. I want to tell you about what Nantucket Island is today. On Nantucket Island, where there used to be the Life Saving Society, there's now a yacht club. Now, a yacht club is very different from a life saving society. A yacht club is for pleasure boating. It exists for the comfort of its members. And there is nothing wrong with yacht clubs. Boats are cool. It's great for boat owners to be able to get together and talk about and share a common interest. But you have to know the difference between a yacht club and a life-saving society. A yacht club exists for the sake of its members. A life-saving society exists for the sake of its members and people out there. People who are in need. And so the question I want to ask you today is, what business are we in? You know, at this point in history, it would be very easy for Sunnyside now to retreat into yacht club status. We would never call it that. We would never consciously make that decision if it were put in front of us that way, but it would be very easy for that to happen. I mean, just look where we are now after 25 years. We have our own building. Wasn't that what we dreamed of for all these years? You know, that we used to talk about, we're like the children of Israel wandering in the wilderness. And now we've arrived. We're in the promised land. Here we are. We've got our own facility. All those years, the church sign out in front had somebody else's name in big letters and Sunnyside in small letters. Go look at the sign today. We're in big letters. Somebody else's church is the renters now. We've arrived. We're operating in the black. We make budget every year. We've got reserves. Why not hang on to what we have? We have over 500 members now. I mean, how much is enough? Isn't 500 enough? I mean, we're practically out of space. Let's just enjoy each other's company. It'd be very easy for us to drift into that. Question. Why do so many churches, whether consciously or subconsciously, why do they drift into yacht club status? Why does that happen? Well, it's comfortable. It is. It's comfortable. You get to hang out with people you like and enjoy each other's company. And you don't have to take risks. You just maintain things as they are, keep the infrastructure going, and it's comfortable. Another reason is because that way you can maintain control. You don't have to share power, especially with the new people. You don't have to accommodate their ideas, which are not your ideas, and which are maybe a little strange. We can just keep doing the way we like it done, and we never have to change. That's why it happens. So the question is, what business are we in? And I can assure you with all my heart, God did not call Sunnyside to be in the yacht club business. He didn't do it 25 years ago, and He's not calling us to that today. We're still to be in the life-changing, life-saving business. Jesus said in the Great Commission, go. Don't stay. Go. Keep moving forward. And this morning, in the time that remains, I just want to simply remind you what that means for this group of people in this location at this time of history. What does that mean, the Great Commission? What does it mean for us? If you have your bulletin, I'd like you to open it up. And I want to read together. I want to read our mission statement. In fact, I want to do it out loud. So would you just say it with me? It's where it says mission statement there on the left-hand side. Read it with me. It says, our purpose is to accept and nurture all who come through our doors, empowering them to be transformed into committed disciples of Jesus Christ. To accept and nurture all who come through our doors. That's the first part of our mission statement. To accept and nurture all who come through our doors. I want to read to you from Matthew chapter 10. Something that will not sound like a profound piece of scripture. This is about Jesus and his original 12 disciples. It says, these are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon and his brother Andrew, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew the tax collector, James, son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. Matthew lists here the 12 original apostles. And for the most part, all he tells us are their names. We don't know really anything else about them at this point, except for two people. There are two people mentioned here. One, he tells us his political affiliation. And the other one, he tells us his occupation. Now, why does he pick out two disciples, tell one of us his political affiliation, and the other his occupation? Well, the one who he tells us his political affiliation was a guy named Simon. It says Simon the Zealot. And you need to know a little bit about what a zealot is. Zealots were a political party that hated Rome. Rome occupied Israel, and the Zealots hated the Romans. In fact, they hated the Romans so much that they advocated physical violence against the Romans as a way of overthrowing and fighting back. Therefore, the Romans considered the Zealots to be terrorists. Now, the biggest flashpoint for the Zealots and the Romans was the issue of taxes. And it wasn't just that the Zealots didn't like having their money taken by the Roman government. It was the fact that they felt like it was blasphemous to have their money taken and used for the sake of an expanding pagan empire. To have holy money taken and used for a pagan empire. They felt like this is blasphemous. This is a sin against God. It's not just money out of our wallet. It's a sin against God. And so they were enraged by this issue of taxes. So the Zealots hated the Romans, but there was one group of people who they hated more than the Romans. They hated the tax collectors even more than the Romans. Because the tax collectors were Jews who, in their eyes, collaborated with Rome to collect the taxes. Basically, they were Jews who were employed by the Roman government and at the expense of their own people would exploit them and give the money back to Rome. So not only were they collaborators, they were traitors, which is the worst kind of enemy. Now, of the 12 apostles, we're told the occupation of only one, Matthew. Anybody want to guess what Matthew's job was? Tax collector. Can you imagine what it was like the first time Matthew and Simon got together and found out that they were in the same small group? These two guys who couldn't be more opposite on just two complete ends of the spectrum are now called by Jesus. Remember, Jesus called his own disciples. Jesus called these two guys and says, guys, you're now going to follow me and you're going to learn how to love each other, even your enemies. And I'm not talking about people out there. I'm talking about the people in this group right here. You're going to learn how to love each other. See, real, true Christian community is meant to break down the walls that separate us. Even the walls that we deem practically impenetrable, and that certainly society says can't be broken down. Christian community says, because we have a common identity that supersedes political, all that stuff, We can still be brothers. We can still love each other. And Jesus intentionally sets it up this way. He intentionally calls people on opposite ends and he says, come worship together. And you know, Sunnyside way back said, yeah, we believe in that. We want to accept and nurture all who come through our doors. Not just most people, all of them. We don't care whether they wear a blue suit or blue jeans. They can worship together. We don't care whether they have blue hair or they're a blue blood. They can worship together. We don't care if they're on the left or the right, liberal, conservative. We can worship together. You know, we don't care if they're young or old. We don't care what their race is. We don't care what their religious background is, whether it's Adventist or Catholic or Pentecostal or whatever, agnostic. We can worship together. We don't care if their musical preference is rock or Bach. They can worship together. And the question is that still true? If we're Jesus followers, it should be. So Christian community is a place where all of us can gather at the foot of the cross. Christian community is also a place where if you are brave enough and humble enough, you can bear your soul to a brother or sister. You know, there's a fabulous story in the Old Testament about Jacob and Esau. Very early on, they hated each other. And if you know the story, Jacob tricked Esau. Esau vowed revenge that he would kill his brother Jacob, and so Jacob had to flee. And for many years, these two brothers were estranged from each other. But a time came where it was now time for them to meet each other again after all these years of estrangement and after that promise of revenge still hangs out there. And on the night before they are to meet, Jacob has this very bizarre encounter with God where he wrestles with him. And toward the end of the wrestling match, God touches Jacob on the hip, and his hip is dislocated. He's injured. And he comes away from the wrestling match with God with a limp. Well, the next morning, these two estranged brothers now begin to move toward each other. And Esau sees his hated brother, Jacob, in the distance. And he recognizes him, but he says, you know, there's something different about him. And he watches, and as he gets closer, he realizes that his brother, Jacob, is limping. And we're told that they finally come to each other, and they embrace, and they become brothers again. Now, we're not told why they embraced as opposed to fought. But one of the ideas is that perhaps Esau saw his brother limping and had compassion on him. He saw him vulnerable. He saw him weak. And my question to you this morning, is there anybody who sees you limp? Anybody in your life? Is there anybody who knows where you're vulnerable? Where you're soft? You know, we live in the world that says, be strong, be smart, be tough, don't let them see you sweat. And I don't know about you, but I do a lot of my life trying to do limp management so they can't see me limp. Put a lot of effort into that. But see, Sunnyside is meant to be a place where it's okay to limp. It's okay to let them see your weak side, to come as you are, not try to put up a big front. A place where you can come with your weakness and instead of being attacked, you'll be embraced. This week I was reading one of those things that probably come on everybody's email where they ask kids questions about life. And, you know, the kids give a kind of funny but very candid answer. And I saw one this week I had never seen before. And the question, one of the questions they asked the kids was, how can you tell if two people are married? How can you tell if two people are married? Little guy Derek, age 8, he said, if they are both yelling at the same kid, they're probably married. He's right, you know. But my favorite one was this. How do you make a marriage work? 7-year-old boy said, tell your wife she's pretty even if she looks like a dump truck. Not advocating that one. Just reporting what I heard. But the question is, who in your life sees you when you look like a dump truck? Not just physically, emotionally, spiritually. Because we all have dump truck days, dump truck months, even years. Is there anybody who sees you in those moments? Who sees your limp? Or is church just the place you come every week, week after week, and you put up a front and no one really knows you? That's not what it's supposed to be. At some point, there needs to be some community, some bonding, some knowing of each other. Are we still in that business? Second part of our mission statement says that we're here to empower people to be transformed into committed disciples of Jesus Christ. To empower people to be transformed into committed disciples of Jesus Christ. I want to tell you this morning the most glorious thing about the church, about this organization we call the church. When I was a little kid, I learned this rhyme, and you guys probably never heard this before, but if you did, you can sing along with me. And you actually have to use your hands. It goes like this. Here's the church, here's the steeple, open the door, and there's all the people. Oh, some of you do know this. Okay, good. And there's all the people. You know what the most glorious thing about the church is? People, like you. Especially people who are on the path of transformation. That's what's really beautiful about the church. When God gets a hold of somebody and begins that work of changing them. And this goes way back. Took a guy named Simon. This weak, kind of quivering, insecure guy. He became Peter, the rock. There was this guy named Saul. Saul was very zealous for his faith. So zealous, in fact, that he would go down and he would hunt down people of the opposing religion. People they called Christians. He even participated in the execution of one of them. And then one day his life was transformed. He went from Saul to Paul, and he became a missionary to the very people he wanted to kill. Transformation. And down through the age, there's been person after person, story after story. You know, there was Augustine, Francis of Assisi, Martin Luther, Mother Teresa, Billy Graham. They're the big names. And there are countless people whose names we've never heard, but who have gone through this same process of being transformed through a relationship with Jesus Christ. So what is the church's greatest asset? What is the church's greatest resource? What is the church's greatest gift? It's people. People like you. Another question. You know what the church's biggest problem is? People. People like the person sitting next to you. It's true, though. People are the biggest problem. And we get frustrated with the people sitting next to us because transformation is slow. It's always slower than we want it to be. The people around us don't change fast enough. And so the church is made up of a lot of broken, messed up, slowly transforming people. And that makes it very easy for some of us to get jaded and cynical about the church. Because when we look at the church, we don't see the beautiful bride of Christ. We see broken, messed up, slowly transforming people. And so what we need is a way of life that actually works. We need a way that actually touches people at the deepest level, at what we call the soul level, the heart level, and gets a hold of them there. So that they're just not working on trying to transform the outside and appear to look good. That's always the religious fallback. But what is it that gets inside people and changes them at the heart level? That's what we're after. And Jesus says, if that's what you're looking for, come follow me. Which brings us to a very difficult step. The step of placing yourself under the authority of somebody who knows better than you how to live this thing called life. In the Great Commission, Jesus says, all authority on heaven and earth has been given to me. Question, how much authority is that? That's a lot. All is a lot. Yeah. All authority on heaven and earth has been given to me. Several months ago, there was an article in USA Today, and the headline said this, more Americans customize their religion to fit their needs. In other words, we like to take religion and customize it so that it works for us. For me, we like a faith that works for what I need. We want faith or religion to adapt to us as opposed to us be changed and transformed by faith. George Barna has a book out right now. He says, we are headed toward a day when we will be a nation of 310 million people with 310 million religions. People want a designer spirituality. They want a designer religion. But Jesus did not come and say, all authority on heaven and earth has been given to you. He said, it's been given to me. You know why designer religion and designer spirituality doesn't work? Because it never confronts you. It never gets you at a point and says, you know, this isn't working, you need to change. A designer religion is always designed around our weaknesses to make us feel good. But it never confronts us, therefore it never transforms us. And that's what Jesus wants to do. He wants to transform us, not just make us feel good. Therefore, we have to be in a transforming relationship with Him. And to do that, you have to give Him full authority over your life. I long for the day when I can stand up before you and say honestly, honestly, that I have put my life, all of it, my money, all of it, my dreams, all of them, my ambitions, my hopes, my family, my mouth, my words, all of it under the authority of Jesus. I'm not there yet, but I hope to get there. And this morning I want to invite you to ask God to reveal, where is the area of your life that He most wants to transform? And you can't ask yourself this question because you'll probably pick an easy part. You have to ask God. Where is it that He most wants to transform you? Maybe you've been clutching on to money for all your security, and He's calling you to let go of that as your source of security. Maybe you are a prisoner of anger, and He's calling you out of bondage to that. Maybe your marriage is dying and it's finally time to let somebody know and do something about it. You know, maybe you're just tired of being grumpy and irritable all the time. And God is saying, why don't you try joy for a change? Maybe He's calling you to forgive someone who has hurt you. And as a byproduct of that, calling you to accept His forgiveness of you. But where is God calling you to transformation in the coming year? 25 years ago, there was a group of 8 families. They banded together. They said, you know what? We need to form a life-saving society right here in Fresno. We need something that doesn't exist for people who are lost at sea. And so they did. And you've heard their story this morning. It wasn't easy. It was tough. They didn't know how they would make it at times. You know, money was tight and resources were tight. And none of them knew anything about how to start a church. Yet they believed that God was calling them to create a little hut of refuge right here. And so they moved forward in prayer and in faith. And today we are the beneficiaries of what they started 25 years ago. But today is our day. Today, it's now our time to say, what business are we in? Are we still in the life-saving, life transformation business? Or do we just want to have a yacht club? Do we want to take the easy, safe, controlled path? Or do we want to keep taking risks? Do we want to kind of close the doors and just enjoy it, or do we want to open them even wider? I am absolutely convinced that God is calling us to go deeper in our relationship with Him than we've ever been before. He's calling us to draw closer to each other in Christian community than we've ever been before, and He's calling us to reach out further into the community than we've ever gone before. But are we in on that? You know, you may not be aware of it, but our church is currently in the process of going through some change and some transformation. Underneath the surface, there are a lot of people asking a lot of questions. Questions like, how can we become a more connected church? How can we make it so that new people don't just stay on the fringes? And people who are here for a long time don't just remain isolated? How do we make real community happen here? And how can we get even more involved in outreach and meeting the needs in the community around? How is this going to happen? And I tell you, it's only going to happen if we're willing to take risks. Because we can't have our comfort and our growth at the same time. I believe that this is what God wants for Sunnyside. And I believe that it's what He wants you to be involved in. But the question is, are you in, are we in, on what God has for us? What business are we in?